So guess what I have? I have a letter from our teacher, James Perez, who wrote to me today from Yucca Valley. He is helping to run a, there's a special group at Spirit Rock for aging, right? It's a group for people like me who are getting older every day. Is that happening to anybody else? Have you noticed that? Like little cricks in your back? Anyway, here is the wonderful letter from James Perez. This is not it. Oh, here it is. I found it. Dear Seattle friends, I'm so happy that you've gone through the Awakening Joy Steps with Bonnie these 6 weeks. The last two themes are the culmination of practice, compassion and the joy of simply being. Compassion is one of the four Brahmaviharas, or divine abodes. It also is sometimes referred to as a sublime state, defined as the quivering of the heart in response to suffering. Suffering is not sublime, of course, but the caring it evokes in us is. So as we experience the compassionate heart, whether being there for a friend or helping someone in need or responding to suffering we hear about in the news, mindfully turning into that caring can awaken joy. Don't miss your caring heart. A step beyond feeling our caring when we're in a position to respond to the suffering we encounter, the impact of our compassion is even greater. Angelus Arian, a wisdom teacher who passed away last year, wisely said, "Action absorbs anxiety." Action absorbs anxiety. By expressing that caring through action, we feel the wholesomeness of making a difference. As Thich Nhat Hanh says, compassion is a verb. It's not up to you to save the world. Don't take that on. You will only feel burdened and overwhelmed because you're not doing enough. Include yourself in your compassionate practice and know your limits. Also, it's not up to you to fix others. Often we're just being present for them when loving awareness is the greatest healing we can offer. The last theme is the joy of simply being. It is an antidote for intensity and frenzy of life. It is always the way we access the inner peace we are looking for. Up until now, all of the other practice themes have involved some kind of doing, trying to cultivate specific wholesome states by performing specific actions such as being generous, expressing gratitude, deepening our compassion or kindness, etc. With this last theme, we switch from doing to simply being. We stop all trying and let ourselves completely rest, simply receiving the moment. I like to describe this as disengaging the clutch. With this new theme, we are practicing releasing our grip of attachment to allow genuine ease and relaxation. This being is available in any moment we remember to be present without any agenda or thoughts about past or future. Moving from doing to being doesn't mean disengaging from life. Instead, it allows our actions to come from a more centered, effective place. The spaciousness produced by coming into being helps us access the wisdom to respond skillfully to any situation. We're allowing for an appropriate response to emerge instead of trying to force things. As Lao Tzu, the great Taoist sage, said, by letting it go, it all gets done. The world is won by those who let it go. But when you try and try, the world is beyond the winning. To the mind that is still, the whole universe surrenders. I hope you find these last two themes support your awakening joy practice, and that the series has had an impact on seeing practice as a path of happiness. These concepts are probably not new to you. The real benefits come from practicing them in real time. As the Buddha advised, by consciously cultivating wholesome states, one creates the conditions for the highest happiness and freedom. The secret is to look for the good inside and around you and bring mindful attention to it when you see it. As I hope you see, this means being willing to open up to everything, the difficult as well as the lovely, and meeting it with a lovely heart. The more you do, the greater you will bring out the goodness and joy in everyone around you. If you want to explore more, you can read my book, Awakening Joy, or visit my website by the same name. I want to express my gratitude to Bonnie. Oh, that's nice. For bringing these ideas and practices to your community. May you be happy and share your love well, James. Aww. Thanks, James. That was a beautiful letter. Thank you, James. Thank you for taking us on this trip with you. So the two things for tonight are compassion and simply being. And first, I'd like to say a little bit about compassion. I was listening to, you know, I think I've said my favorite Dharma teacher right now, in addition to, of course, my teacher Joseph and Rodney and all the LDLs here, is Ram Burbia. And he's, again, got like 500 talks on Dharma Seed. You can hear me, right? And he was saying today, I was listening to a talk on compassion. Is that working? No. I was listening to a talk on compassion, and he was saying that all of the Brahma Viharas have two characteristics to them that make them different than just everyday, you know, emotional states. And the first characteristic of the BVs is that they're boundless. And I just want us to reflect on that for a second. What is boundless compassion? So it just is in every single direction towards every single thing. And then the second condition of all, the second characteristic of the Brahma Viharas is that they are unconditional. Unconditional. So I think that we can, you know, bring to mind what's happening in the world right now. So one thing that's happening in the world is all of our relatives in Nepal. They're really sitting through a lot of suffering right now. One of the scientists on my team is actually an indigenous Nepali woman. And she was telling me that her mother's fine and her family's fine. And in many villages, 100% of the houses are gone. 100% of them are gone. So I think it's easy for us to, you know, think about the suffering. I'm sure many of us have been to Asia, studying the Dharma. Maybe we've been to Nepal, and we know what that's like, and we feel just that sense of compassion that goes out there. And, you know, We're ready to do whatever we can to actually ease some suffering. And then we think about what other things are happening right now. Today, you know, my staff and I were talking about Baltimore. Wow, there's some suffering going on in Baltimore. And I'm sure depending on, you know, what our lived experiences are, you might, when you hear that, just have compassion for people who are in the streets. And, you know, for me it was so wonderful to see that, you know, I had a lot of compassion for the people that were in the streets because, you know, I'm sure that they have, a number of life histories and just U.S. history that brings them to the point of being in the streets. And I know the karma of what they're doing. You know, it's very mixed karma. But then, you know, I also heard the chief of police talk about his anxieties and where he's coming from. And I felt, you know, I really was able to feel the exact same way, that we can understand, you know, both his suffering and also the karma of where he's coming from and the police forces as well. And, you know, in a way, for me, that was a small, you know, I don't feel that all the time, but in that moment, that felt like unconditional opening to, you know, the suffering that's really with any particular side. You know, no side is free of karmic elements and free of, a need for understanding. And I think that that's available to all of us in cultivating, the Brahma Viharas and compassion. So what are the challenges to us all being compassionate? Let me tell you too, when I was preparing this talk, I Googled compassion and handout. Oh my gosh. There is some excellent free stuff out there about compassion. Really extraordinary stuff. So if you're ever feeling like you want, if you have a sitting group or something and you want your sitting group to have a little project, develop, you know, compassion and handout. Well, actually, any key terms and handout is an excellent way to search the internet. I'm telling you, I'm a college professor. I can get stuff right before I got to go on. Key terms and handouts, very good. But anyway, so there's two challenges to for us to bring compassion to any situation. And one is just, you know, our evolutionary brain is a challenge to compassion. And there's a lot out there about, you know, these three types of systems in our brain. There's a lot out there about our old brain, where our emotions and needs of relationships dwell, you know, our amygdala, where anger and wanting and, you know, the need for relationship is really housed in this structure. And then our new brain, which has imagination and planning and reasoning, and what happens is that our old brain gets triggered out of fear or out of some unmet need. You know, you can think of your work or your home life or something, and some unmet need in us gets triggered, and we have a sense of some so-called negative emotion. And that negative emotion actually lassoes our reasoning self, and we just take it to the limits. You know, what can I do to get back at this person, or what can I do to, you know, this person needs to be cut out of, you know, my life. And, you know, we just lasso our imagination and reasoning towards the ends of this kind of unreasonable part of ourselves. And that's where mindfulness really comes in handy, Because we can see that we're getting trapped in that kind of pattern, and actually just surrender, feel the pain of it in the moment, and then just try to let go. Actually, there's this wonderful little piece that I found about compassionate self-direction versus shame-based self-attacking. And I want to see if any of this resonates with any of you. I saw a lot of myself in this. So a compassionate self-correction is focused on the desire to improve, growth and enhancement, forward-looking, giving with encouragement, support, and kindness. And then, along the same lines, a shame-based self-attacking is focused on the desire to condemn and punish rather than to approve, pushing past errors and often backwards, punishing past errors and just looking backwards, being obsessed with things that we've done in the past, giving with anger, frustration, contempt, and disappointment. Have you ever done that? I was just thinking how often I do things for my partner and with, you know, just this, you know, not the most wholesome qualities associated with it. So compassionate self-correction builds on positives, seeing what one did well and then considering learning points, you know, giving ourselves a break. Whereas a shame-based self-attacking is focused on deficits and fear of exposure, focusing on self as a global sense of self, you know, having, you know, some thoughts that create an identity that we just take to be ours forever. And then focusing, you know, a shame-based reality focuses on fear and failure. And, you know, if we can infuse compassion, you know, what we're asking is to infuse compassion in the very same thoughts, these very same response to emotions. And, you know, rather than all that negativity and heaviness, we could be, you know, focusing on our positive attributes and qualities that we really admire, focusing on hope for success, and, you know, building on the positives that we already have. So that's compassion. And there are, you know, Kristin Neff is the queen of compassion. And there's all these wonderful handouts that you can get, again, if you Google compassion and handout. And there's a couple of practices that I just thought I would share with you because they're just really beautiful and meaningful. You know, one is a self-compassion break. And I actually have been trying to do this. You know, when you're feeling some negative emotion, just, you know, create the habit of a self-compassion break. And just, you know, actually putting your hand, let's try it together. Just touching our heart. And that actually has a physiological impact, right? It actually triggers the vagus nerve. And then just acknowledging what's happening in the moment by saying to yourself out loud or in your mind, wow, this is a moment of suffering. Suffering is like this. You know, just acknowledging that we are suffering in this moment. This hurts. This is tough. Ouch. This is an ouch. And then secondly, a reflection. Suffering is a part of living. This is an acknowledgement of our common humanity, that there's not a creature that lives that doesn't suffer in some way. Other people feel this way. I am not alone. We all struggle in our lives. That's the second step. And then the third step is setting an intention to be kind to ourselves. May I be kind to myself? See if we can find the words for what we need in the moment. May I accept myself just as I am. May I give myself the compassion that I need. May I learn to accept myself just as I am. May I be strong. May I be safe. May I forgive myself. Those three steps, a self-compassion break. Just acknowledging our suffering, feeling the exquisite club we belong to when we acknowledge suffering. It's an exquisite club that we all are members of. And then just giving yourself a break. I love that. And then another wonderful self-compassion in daily life. How many of you think that you're too hard on yourselves? Let's see it. So this is a nice club we all belong to right here. It's our common humanity. None of us are nice enough to ourselves. We all belong to this exquisite club right now. So here is some ways that we can develop habits of self-compassion. Habits of self-compassion. One is to work physically to soften the body. And how do we do that? I do have a massage scheduled for this week. Some of our health insurances now pays for massage. I think the ACA pays for massages. You know, massages, exercise, taking a warm bath, or even just a sweet cup of tea. So to physically, you know, develop patterns of taking care of ourselves for self-compassion and self-care. And then mentally, this is a really good one that I don't know why I hadn't thought about this before, to mentally reduce agitation. It seems so simple to think of. What could we do to reduce agitation? Well, one thing we could do is just to create a sitting practice. Sitting practice is like, for me, it's like taking an aspirin for the emotions. It just ratchets up the level of, you know, the level of tolerance for things. You know, the level of getting imbalanced. It just, you know, really increases that a lot. And then emotionally, soothe and comfort yourself. Even that just little bit of self-compassion at times of feeling emotionally hurt or physically, I think could be very meaningful. And then relationally, connect with others. I think being in Sangha is an excellent relational exercise because, you know, we trust that we're all trying to move in the same direction. You know, we can trust that we're not going to get exploited here or, you know, that this is a safe place. And then spiritually, to use mindfulness to be motivated by our values and not by all those negative mental states that have us by the throat when, you know, we're just reacting out of reactivity rather than really connecting with our values and letting that be the intention for our lives. So that was self-compassion. And I only have 10 minutes to talk about just being. And that's got some really excellent stuff too. So elements of being. I loved these three elements of being that James talks about because they have been really meaningful to me. The first element of being is to trust. I remember listening to actually a Dharma talk by James where I think he was in retreat for like 3 months or something. And he got to some point where everything he was trying to do was just getting in his way. And he just had this huge kind of breakthrough with this very strong element of trust. Trust in this moment, and everything just fell away. And we can see how that can happen. Trusting that whatever karma there is unfolding in this moment, and that's what's determining what's happening, not my wanting it to be like this or not wanting it to be like that. And then the second element of being, of course we all love this, is equanimity. And equanimity is being engaged with experience without reactivity. But if you are engaged with experience with reactivity, to not be reactive to your reactivity. Isn't that wonderful? Just surrender to the fact that you're reactive. Hey, right now it's like this for me. I'm a little bit reactive, and that's okay. I mean, that's like trusting your reactivity. At some point, you have to let go of wanting it to be any other way. Surrendering to being hijacked by our karma. And knowing when we're not hijacked, and knowing the peace and freedom of that. I think we all have the experience of meditating, and then one thing will arise in our mind, and it will be like, wow, that's interesting. You know, some mental or heart-based habit pattern that is not very sticky, and we can just see it, and, you know, determine whether it's wholesome or not. And then in the very next moment, there'll be something arises that's just so sticky and just will make us wince. Did that ever happen to anybody? And, you know, at that point, we know what, you know, is still very sticky for us. We know what we're identified with. It's really an interesting process. And then the final element of being, of simply being, I love this one, is just a sense of awe. A-W-E, awe. So I had a sense of awe. Can I tell you a story real quick? So I have a research project right now where we're doing an alcohol harm reduction in 6 tribal colleges. Can I say which tribal colleges? No? Chris has ever known. Well, there's one tribal college in the Plain States that's in a very large reservation. Maybe it's in one of the Dakotas. And we trained, you know, we were trying to train like 4 or 5 people to give this intervention. It's just an hour-long brief intervention. Because, you know, college students, they really drink a lot. So it's trying to get college students not to drink so much. And it really wasn't working. We've been working with this one group of people for like a year and a half, and we're just really having a hard time. And so the president of the college just cleared the slate. It was like he just wiped his hand across it and he said, no, you're not going to work with these people, you're going to work with these people. And this new, we got appointed a new, they actually hired a new dean of students, this guy named Wayne. And Wayne pulled it together. He brought together like 4 people who actually had mental health training. You know, our staff from UW, like 3 people went out and gave him a week-long training and came back and talked about this Wayne guy, how Wayne, you know, totally translated these Western concepts of alcohol harm reduction for this with this tribal language, about how it was so consistent with these tribal values. And we were all, I was even just joking with my staff. I was saying, oh yeah, your husband Wayne. because they all just loved him so much. You know, they were just saying great things. So last week I was in Albuquerque. We were having a writing retreat, our research center. And you know, there was the biggest power in the whole world was the Gathering of Nations. So I was, you know, standing in line for breakfast, and you know, it was all these Native people, and there was this cute little girl with like a princess costume on, right? She had this crown, this beaded crown, and it was like Miss Junior Indian or something, and she was just adorable. And these three men were talking to her, and it turned out she was from the Pacific Northwest. And these three men said, "Oh yeah, we're from Pine Ridge, and we're from Pine Ridge, and you know, we just think your daughter is beautiful, and she should be, you know, the Indian princess." And I said, "Oh, you're from Pine Ridge?" I said, "I love Pine Ridge." And they said, "Oh yeah, who are you?" And I said, "Oh, my name is Bonnie Duran." And one of the guys said, "Oh, my name is Wayne." I was in awe. That, don't you think that's kind of amazing? That really happened. And he and I had been like Facebooking each other, like I was thinking, you know, we are so grateful you stepped in. And he says, "Well, I'm so happy to be doing this." And then not in South Dakota, not in Washington, but in Albuquerque, in line for breakfast. I was like, oh my gosh. It was beautiful. Anyway, I had a sense of awe. And I just surrendered to the fact that it was a wonderful thing. Anyway, we are up against our time. Does anyone want to share how difficult it has been or any successes in inclining our mind towards joy or working with the material? Anybody have any happiness to share? Good outcomes, or you know, bad outcomes are good too. We all belong to the same club. You know, that's happening for all of us, both of those things. Yes?
Bonnie, I just want you to know how much I appreciate that you brought this to us.
Oh.
It's been a wonderful 6 weeks.
Well, thank you so much. That's making me happy. It's been a huge, you know, pleasure for me. I feel incredibly honored and humbled. It's a humbling thing to sit up here. And I feel like you guys are all so forgiving and easily pleased. I appreciate you all very much. Thank you. Anybody else? Yes? Right, yeah, just, yeah, I think that that's the best thing, because that's kind of like having compassion for ourselves, right? Like, hey, I wish it was different, but it's like this. It is really like this right now. And not getting reactive to our reactivity, not beating ourselves up. That's kindness, that's watering kindness. Yes? I think that it depends on what you want. If you want wholesome mental states, if you want patience and generosity, and I think that the desire for that, there's a Pali term called chanda, C-H-A-N-D-A, chanda, which is kind of like a wholesome desire. There's another word, samvega, which is a desire for freedom. And actually, that's part of the core Buddhist principles of this training, of the Awakening Joy training, that wanting wholesomeness and wanting freedom is actually a very wholesome thing. You know why? Because it usually only comes when we see the, when we can see very clearly just how useless everything we usually want is. Right? So, and that's a huge insight. It's a huge insight to know that that next retail therapy is not going to get us anywhere. Or that next date, or that next whatever. To want something that's not conditioned, to want freedom. But you know, again, you know, I love the way that Anushka languaged it. You know, we might have an insight and want freedom, and then our ego takes a hold of it, and it's us that wants freedom. You know, it's this ego self. And that's just something else to be aware of. That's just another element of clinging to be aware of, just like everything else. Okay, last one, any last one? That's a great question, though. Any last one? Yes?
I'll just put a quick plug in for the book that this comes from. I got it from the library last week. These light wisdom, you know, joy and forgiveness things are things that I always really struggle with in my practice. And the book is, I mean, plus I already have the foundation of the talk that I did with you.
Mm-hmm.
It's very practical.
It is very practical, it is.
Yeah.
So she said that she got the Awakening Joy book out of the library, and it's very meaningful. It's been very useful. Because it is, it's very practice-based. It has exercises that you can do, just like those, you know, that exercise of, you know, self-compassion. Just having a habit of giving ourselves a break when we're hurting. I love that. Be our own mother, you know. So that brings us to the end. Thank you all for being patient and for allowing me to sit up here and engage you with this, with the Dharma. And I want to apologize. There's this old, you know, wonderful ritual of apologizing for any harm. So I want to apologize for any harm I've done during this 6 weeks. And I forgive you for any harm that you've done to me. So now we have some great announcements. I think Joyce wanted to say something great.